So today, as we get ready to lead into Vacation Bible School, we are in the midst of a series where we're talking about the heroes from the Bible, and we're getting to move into some of those today, and we've got a special one coming up, and we're actually going to go back to the beginning. But I wanted to just ask you a couple of questions as we get ready. Why do you think we love heroes so much? I mean, if Marvel releases a movie, it makes $400 million, like, minimum in a weekend. Why do we love heroes so much? What do you think? Yeah, in the back.
Hope.
Hope, okay, all right. That's good.
They protect us.
They protect us. That's a good one.
They do the impossible.
Absolutely.
Gives us something to look forward to.
And
they conquer evil.
Yeah, they conquer evil. I'm glad nobody said they wear spandex. That's what I thought you were going to say. So I said it for you. You don't have to say it in front of your peers. It's okay. Yeah, in the back.
It gives us someone to look up to. They're the good guys.
Maybe we can do something too.
They're the good guys. Maybe we can do it too. Yeah, absolutely. So I think it was this year. I was thinking about it this week as I was thinking through all of the superheroes, and I was thinking about who could we pluck out as heroes from the Bible, and then it just kind of struck me that there's this underlying question, and it's underlying in everything that you said, even though we didn't quite name it. But I'm going to go back to the question again: why is it that we would even need a hero? I mean, what is the underlying reason?
To be saved.
From what?
Evil.
From evil. From not good. We're admitting in all of ours, we need to be protected. Protected from what? We need hope. Hope from what? Right? We need somebody to look up to. Why? Because there might not be some good examples. All of these things tie together into this understanding that there is good and that there is evil, not good, bad, wrong, harmful, hurtful, whatever you want to call it, right? That there are these two opposing forces. And we felt that inside of us before we even picked up our first comic book, right? We know it. And if we're going to be honest, and I hope that we're honest, I think that's one of the things the church really needs to be, right? Is that both of those live right here. And each of us. Now, we want to be good. You know, I mean, most of us. Right? There's clinical terms for the others, but yeah. For most of us, we want to be good, at least some semblance of it, and we're constantly fighting against not being good. We're constantly fighting against this thing inside of us that is saying, don't be good. But if we're going to be honest, when we're going to look back today, we're actually going to look back at the stories in Genesis and kind of look through a few. This thing that is inside of us, this evil, this wretch, this sin, it's really a desire to do wrong on behalf of ourselves. Now, we like to blame it on others and things like that, and we're really good at that. Just watch the news. But the honest truth is that evil is other places. But the most prominent place for each one of us is that it's right here inside of us. We see it since the very beginning, and we're constantly struggling against it. And we need this hero. I have these sayings that I like to say with my daughters, and it started with Grace, and I say it with the others, but I say things like, you know, and I've told you this before, but what's more important than how we look, you know, is what we say and what we think and what we do. My favorite one that I like to say with them is especially cute when they're little, like a little 4-year-old Scotty, and I say, what does a girl do when she needs a superhero? And the answer is, she becomes one, right? And I'm like, yes, yes. We need a superhero. We need a hero. We feel it in our souls when we watch Batman or Spider-Man or whatever the person, when I asked you last week, who is your favorite superhero? We watch them. There's something that resonates in our souls that says, we need that. We want to be that for whatever reason. Now, maybe it's just pure narcissism and we want everybody to look at us like that, and that may be a chance. But I think we know there's this inherent struggle between what's good and right and what's wrong and evil. And I think we honestly know, like, good superheroes, like I told you, my favorite was Batman, because you get to see that he has the struggle between good and bad inside of him. That's why I don't really like Superman, because he only has the good, and I just cannot relate to that. I'm just being honest with you. I can't relate to that. I struggle against myself more than I struggle against anything else. You know, and honestly, who am I to deny myself, right? I should just be able to do whatever I want. No? Well, so we're going to go back to Genesis today, and I'm going to start, and I'm going to show you a video. If you remember when we started walking through the Bible together, we used a group that puts together some videos and some different video commentaries called the Bible Project. I'm going to show you one of theirs. If you started with us in Genesis, you've probably already seen this, but I'm going to show you today. I am also going to remind you that not all of the stories in the Bible are rated G. Roll the beautiful bean footage. All right. Did you find any of your heroes in there? I noticed last week nobody said like Adam and Eve were their heroes. You didn't name Noah either, I don't think. Right? Who did you say some of your heroes were? You're like, oh no, this is a trap, isn't it? But as we watch, we begin to find that they were human just like us. And that we begin to find that it, quite honestly, the hero that we find throughout Scripture, the hero that we find in the Bible, the hero that we find inside of us is really God. The original goodness of creation. It doesn't mean that we don't participate in that. That's what Genesis is about, is that we are co-creators with God, that God created, but then God gave us that authority. It says that God made us in God's image. Now, that word in Hebrew, and you may already know this, you're smarter than I am, but that word in Hebrew for image is the same word that's used for idols. When we are told not to make idols, it's the same word. We are not to make additional images of God. God has already made those images, and those images are you and me. How terrifying is that? Right? And we don't think that he just meant that Adam and Eve were so perfect and everything was great. We obviously see that they were not perfect. So sometimes we try to go back and whitewash it and say, no, I'm sure that when God said he was making the images, he was just talking about Adam and Eve. But no, he's talking about us, humanity, life. We are the image of God. And when I say that we are the idols of God, it doesn't mean that God idolizes us or that we're doing something wrong. It's in saying that when God tells them not to make idols and not to put those idols before me, sometimes we got to remember that we are those idols. And that the core human truth that needs salvation and a hero is that we have constantly tried to put ourselves before God. Now, we'll never admit that out loud in church, unless we're being real honest. I've talked about it. Maybe the Methodist Church needs to bring back confession. I don't know. I don't want to do it. I would outsource that, right? I still want to love you. I'm sure we could. The Catholics would probably, I don't know, maybe they would come. I don't know what would happen. We could try it, though, if you wanted to. So send me emails about that if you want to. We are the image of God. We were created to be the idol of God. And again, I don't mean that God would idolize us or that we're something that's evil. I mean, we were created to look like God. And we know that that doesn't mean on the outside. We know that it means on the inside. We know it means in the way that we treat this world and the way that we treat one another and the way that we live our lives and the way that we speak and the way that we say and think and do that is more important than how we look. We were meant to be the representation of God in this world. That doesn't mean that God isn't still active in this world. Of course we believe that God is. But God is most active in this world through you and through me. That's how God designed it. We are told that in the very first story in Scripture. Genesis 1:27 in A just simply says, God created humanity in God's own image. God created humanity in God's own image. And again, that word for image is the same one that we find other places in the Old Testament where we translate it idols, because we realize that in this positive context, it means this. But that same word can also be used in a negative context, that we don't put idols before God. And so I love this juxtaposition when we get to the Ten Commandments and it says, don't make an idol and put it before me. Well, yeah, don't make the golden calf. But I think in a way that the Hebrews would have understood when they read it, that we don't catch in our English translations, it's a little more pointed. Since the beginning, my friends, my family, my loved ones, my creation, you have wanted to put yourself above me. You have wanted to be God. You have wanted to define good and evil, even though I defined it for you. You have wanted to rule in my place, not alongside with me or under me. Stop putting yourself before me. You see, God is the hero in all human heroes. And there's this other thing that begins to happen that it's strange to even say out loud, but when God rests, we're in charge. If you had children, have you ever told one child when they're a child that they're in charge of the others? How does that go? Yeah. It's going to, in all honesty, it's going to go about like it's going to go in the presidential election. Right? When you tell somebody that they get to be in charge of other people, what's the saying? Power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely. Right? And my point there is, sometimes we can look at children and see a little microcosm of what it looks like, but when we begin to extrapolate the things that kids do, we often see it on an adult scale. It just looks a little different, and we're really good at lying about it, and people who benefit from it will cover it up for us. When God rests, we're in charge. Now, I love this. As I read through the creation stories, I noticed something I had never realized before. The Sabbath only happens in the first creation story. It doesn't happen in the second creation story. Instead of the Sabbath happening in the first creation, or it happens in the first, but in the second, we cut right to the scene where they're talking to the snake that still has legs and can speak, right? And then God has to come down and walk in the garden. They're embarrassed and they've hidden because they ate the fruit. You see, God gives humanity. Let's look at Genesis 2, verse 15. Genesis 2, 15. The Lord God took the human and settled him in the Garden of Eden to farm it and to take care of it. And you know other scriptures that say, go forth and multiply and subdue the earth, right? God gave humanity, you and me, humanity and life, God's authority on this earth to be a part of co-creation, to create from out of ourselves, to oversee the animals and the land and the fish and the birds and all of it was given to us to oversee. God has made us before the fall, given us, and even after the fall, didn't take it away from us, the responsibility of overseeing all of it. Now again, God is still active, yes. But God has decided since the very beginning to co-create and run this place with us. God has invited us into this understanding of the Trinity, that we may be a part of the Father, Son, Holy Ghost, that it might be in us, that we might be saved through it. Not so that we can be God like we've always tried to be, but so that we might realize that we do need a hero. One of the key questions of Genesis is, can we trust God? And more specifically, can we trust God to define good and evil? And the answer that Eve and Adam answer for all of humanity is, we don't think so. Now, that's not the answer from the church. That's the answer from the heart of humanity. Have you ever said, well, if I were God? I have. There's about a weekly basis that happens. If I were God, insert school shooting. If I were God, insert accident on the connector. If I were God, insert natural event that happens. If I were God, insert war and atrocity. If I were God. Do you hear the underlying principle there? I really kind of want to be. And if I had the chance, if we had the chance, we could do it better. Now, I'm going to give Eve a break here, because I realized as I was reading through Genesis 1 and Genesis 2 that God never told Eve the rules. She wasn't created yet. God told Adam. I think it's like my house. Adam forgot to tell Eve. Right? He put it in the Google Calendar, but they didn't talk about it. Right? I just thought you knew. We know that she was told at some point. She begins to quote, right? You see, the central moral of the tree is that we want to rule. Now, in the church, we would say, oh, preacher, that is just not right. We submit ourselves to who God is, and I believe that we do, and we want to. But what I'm telling you is that in our heart, even if it's in the smallest fraction of a space, I mean, let's just raise our hands if we're perfect, right? No, you're not going to raise your hand. Inside of us, we want to be God. We want to be in charge of our own autonomy, of everything that goes on with us. We want to be in charge of other people, if we're being quite honest. If they would just do it my way, everything would be fine, Stephen Saul says out loud every time he's on I-24. Right? Every time I watch a political debate, I say it out loud. Every time I see a spat on Facebook, I'm pretty sure I know better. My heart of hearts wants to be in charge. My heart of hearts, right? But we were trying to replace that with something else. And I liked what the video had said. I never thought about that before. But the rift it showed between Adam and Eve, you know, it picturalized it as this blackness that was kind of a personification of sin, right, growing, but that it was a division between them too. And we know that from the story, but maybe it just wasn't said out loud explicitly. But the honest truth is that when we as humanity decided that you know what, actually, we can decide what is good and evil, because that's what's going on with the tree. God has said what is good and evil, and when we've decided, no, we know what's good and evil, we want to be in charge of that. You know, I don't know if you've turned on the TV, but we can't agree on what's good and evil. As a matter of fact, the one thing that appears to be constant, is that I'm pretty sure we disagree on everything, right? So a lot of times we just find all the people who agree with us. And we get together in groups, whether it's on Facebook or real life, or whatever it is, so that we can just be surrounded by the people who are also right. It doesn't matter what your cause or viewpoint or political party or whatever it is, we all do that. We may not realize we're doing it, but Facebook knows we're doing it and they feed us more of it. We can't agree. I love how Adam goes about this and Eve too. So we're going to look at that. Chapter 3, verses 12 through 13, and we're going to throw them up there. This is Adam speaking. God has said, you ate from the fruit. What are you doing? And Adam says, she gave me some fruit from the tree. What is Adam saying? It's not my fault. It's her fault. It's not mine. She gave it to me. What was I supposed to do? She put it on the calendar. I just have to show up. It's her fault. But what we miss is the part before that too. And I find this even deeper, right? So let's go back. This is the first part before that sentence. This is what comes before the little ellipses. The woman you gave me. And we've talked about this before. You hear what's in that, right? Like we like it where it says just the woman. You're like, the woman. It was her fault. And then we've historically used that to blame women. I want to be clear, church. We have faulted Eve. And remember, God didn't tell Eve. God told Adam. Adam must not have told Eve right. All right? You gave me. Whose fault is it? Oh, it's God's fault. That's right. She gave it to me and I ate it. But by the way, you gave me her. Right? This is your fault. I could just see my son throwing the ball and hitting one of our other children. When I come out and say, what did you do? He'd say, well, you gave me the ball. Right? We blame. And we blame each other. And we blame God. And we blame creation. If we're going to be quite honest, we look at Genesis 13. So we just move down one. The snake tricked me. It wasn't my fault. I was gullible. I didn't know what was better. They told me what was right and wrong, and it turns out they were wrong. It's obviously their fault. I believed this talking lizard. And I got to be honest with you, if a lizard walked up to me and talked, I'd consider it. You know what I mean? That's pretty wild. I would be hesitant. Don't hear me wrong. It would go in the 51% not category, but there's 49% of me that would be like, this is something, right? I knew those shrimp had turned. We deeply want a hero. We want it to be us sometimes, but we know inside of us that sometimes it can't be. That's why we look on the outside. We want someone to protect us, to save us, to give us hope, to show us the right way, to fight the bad guys that we don't think we can win. We need that on the outside. We need someone who can do what's right and what needs to be done and can thwart the evil that we think is evil. But we spend a lot of our time looking in the wrong places. In the lizard that talks. But today, we're going to take part in this meal together. And this meal is for our whole church. We have it here, and we also have the elements. If you ever notice behind, there's the elements that we take to those who get communion at home that aren't able to come and be a part of us. And there are those who watch online who may have their own elements and are able to participate in Holy Communion with us. But this is a meal today that I want you to think about. It takes us back to the tree. Are we going to choose our own version of good and evil? And I want you to just be honest with yourself real quick, okay? You don't have to be honest with anybody else. We won't actually make you go that far. That'd be crazy. When I say we're going to go back to the tree to decide what's good and right, we really do think that what we think is good is the good, right? And what we think is evil is the evil. I want you to feel that eating of the fruit. It's in all of us. We need a hero. It's ingrained in us. We all want to be the heroes in our own stories. Sometimes we do choose what's right. If we're honest, sometimes we don't. And if we're really honest, we realize it's not actually our story if we get to the root of it. You see, today we get to say in this meal of Holy Communion that we will choose the goodness of God, that we will be the images, the reflection of God, not because we are so good, not because we got it all figured out, not because we are the most theologically astute, preacher. We will choose the goodness of God over the selfishness of ourselves. We want to be first. We want to be over. We want to be more important than. Think about the slogans we see around us, whether it's political causes or whatever it may be. Man, Jesus said, you want to be first? Well, guess what? You get to be last. These are the people I've called you to be. Today in this meal, we get to go back to the tree. We get to choose right again. And we get to make this choice each and every day, not just because we are here in this sanctuary.